Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm Gary Gramling.
I'm Jenny Brentis.
I'm Connor Orr.
And guys, we are starting with an interconference battle, which probably won't have much effect on the standings when it's all said and done. But everyone seems to be talking about the Sunday night game, so we will as well. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers squeak out a victory against a rookie quarterback in Foxborough, 19-17. And I guess, I don't know, let's start with the decision at the end of the game. The Patriots, who had some success moving the ball throughout this game, especially in the second half, they get to the Bucs' 37-yard line. They are facing a 4th-and-3 in the rain. There are 59 seconds left. They are trailing by 2. They opt not to try and convert the first down. They put it in the foot hands, of their field goal kicker, and Nick Folk hits the left upright. No one likes to call him retrospect because he missed the kick, but are we okay with the call in real time?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, Gary. When they made the decision, it was a little surprising because it was a 56-yarder in a driving rain, and like you said, they had been moving the ball very well. But then Nick Folk kicks it, and it looks like it's going in, and it's like, okay, yeah, this was a good decision. They knew what they were doing. And then it doinks, and it's like, well, why didn't they just go for it? So it's sort of hard to evaluate it when you can tell the outcome, right? But I think it should be a question that we should discuss because
I think if you're Belichick, the obvious move here would be to really try to rip Tom's heart out by putting the ball in the hands of his successor and allowing Mac Jones to lead the team to victory and like instantaneously making everybody in the stadium forget that Brady even existed, you know? And I think that you have to stay true to yourself and do the meanest possible thing that you can possibly do. But instead it was just, it was sort of anticlimactic, right? It had like a, I'm not in good company here, but a sequel or like the end of a movie that didn't really live up to the expectations, you know, like something that sort of sputtered out like maybe the end of The Sopranos or something. You know, it just sort of had that vibe to it where, I don't know, I was expecting something a little better.
It's interesting in the context of the Patriots' overall development of Mac Jones, because they have been bringing him along at a somewhat measured pace. He has been by far the best rookie quarterback to play, but at the same time, they have done so in a controlled manner. And maybe that's why he's looked the best, is they've, you know, limited the things they've had him do. Now in this game, they opened it up because maybe they had to. And also there were opportunities to do so with a banged up Bucs secondary. But they weren't willing to take that final step of totally putting the game in his hands.
I wonder if they got a little bit skittish after that one near interception that Mac Jones threw in the red zone, the one that Devin White should have had toward the end of the, was that still third quarter or fourth quarter? I can't even remember. That's how, this is a really long game.
It was like felt like it. I think that was fourth quarter
like,
at that point.
It's like 3 a.m. now. That was like a 7-hour game, I think. But yeah, I wonder if that sort of, you know, just seeded a little bit of doubt with them. And I guess the other thing is, you know, Todd Bowles is probably going to throw whatever his most exotic look is at that point if you give him the opportunity. But, I mean, my goodness, you have Pierre Desir and Richard Sherman, who both fine pros in their heyday. But, my God. Neither guy can cover anyone. I mean, Richard Sherman is just going to be feasted on these in-breaking routes going forward here. And it just felt like there would have been a matchup somewhere on the field. I don't know.
Well, I think that's what you would do if you're Belichick, right? Though that's what you've always been good at, is considering all the factors and making an informed decision. And I think that if you look at all the bullet points in your favor, you have a great offensive coordinator, someone that you trust implicitly. You have an accurate quarterback. You have two tight ends, mid-range targets that you spend a lot of money on. You have two other wide receivers that you acquired this offseason that run these in-breaking routes really well. And you have a bad secondary. So I don't know. I think that there's a lot of things working for you. That said, Bill Belichick cut his teeth as a special teams coach. I mean, here's a guy who probably watched Nick make kicks on every inch of that field before the game started and probably knew where his comfort level was and, you know, kind of knows him really well too. And so it's hard to say, but if we're looking at it from both sides, I don't know. I think I kind of give that edge to let him try to get the 3 yards, and because I think it has benefits down the road too. If you try that kick, you know you're going to get second guessed. But I think if you put the ball in Mac Jones's hands, it also shows an implicit kind of faith. I think it's kind of a reward for a game that he completed 18 passes in a row, 19 passes. I think that was an NFL record. No rookie's ever done that. And so I think that's sort of an acknowledgement that, yeah, you earned this. Like, let's take your shot. And unfortunately, you know, he didn't get that. And so we're always kind of left wondering now what might have been.
I mean, that's kind of it. It's just a huge bummer for us, the people who just do takes and narratives and that sort of thing, because There's no real way to look at this and be like, oh yeah, you know, that missed field goal to end this game was quite fitting. And I mean, this game was just all about narratives. Again, it's an interconference game, so it has very little effect on tiebreakers, stuff like that, probably none. And on top of that, it's a 17 game season here. Mathematically, this was one of the least important regular season games either guy has ever participated in. You know, if you throw out the, you know, any sort of meaningless week 17 type of things, it won't have a very large weight on the road to the Super Bowl, which apparently both guys have won in the past, as far as I know. But yeah, I don't know. It's whatever. We're shrugging our shoulders and being like, eh, I guess it was okay to try the field goal, and it missed, and here we are now.
But I think if you're the Patriots, despite the fact that it was a heartbreaking way to lose a game that was touted beyond anyone's imagination, really. I mean, the build-up to this was even more intense than I expected. But I think you still are leaving feeling good about the direction that you're headed and feeling like your quarterback is really showing steady progress and that maybe this will work.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, is it weird to say that, you know, I mean, I wouldn't go so far as to say something wild like it's a statement game for Mac Jones. But would you call it, you know, something where it's like a sort of an arrival moment? I don't know. You know, I poo-pooed that today, too, on our website, the idea that a rookie quarterback arrives. But I do think this was a significant step forward in Mac Jones's career. And, you know, had that field goal gone through, I think the narrative would be that in some way, shape or form, he may have outplayed Tom Brady a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. He did probably outplay Tom Brady in this game. And look, the Patriots had answers against this Bucs defense, which, again, bigger picture, the Bucs have issues here in their secondary. And if you are going to play the type of defense Todd Bowles plays and wants to play, and rightfully wants to play because he calls it well and he has the team to do it, you need cornerbacks who can cover. And they are just out of dudes at this point. I mean, they basically hung on in this game because they won the turnover battle 2-0. And they, you know, they got that missed kick at the right time when it was all said and done. But, you know, whatever. This is a team that played, what, 19 games a year ago? 20 games? 19 games. How many games do you play in this league anymore?
20. No,
nobody knows. 20 games a year ago and stayed relatively healthy. And it was going to be tough to do again. And when you have a rash of injuries in one position group, it's a big issue. When that position group is a reactionary position, like cornerback is, like defensive back is, it's an even bigger issue. So we'll see how they manage this going forward. But we might be in a situation where Tom Brady's going to have to go out there and start putting up these 35, 40-point games on a pretty regular basis if they're going to stay atop the NFC.
Yeah, and Brady was a little off tonight. We saw that some of his throws that he normally makes were a little off target, and I think it's natural that the emotions of the moment could play into that a little bit, but it was just a combination of factors. And between not looking the sharpest version of themselves tonight, for there to be additional injury issues in the secondary on top of what they already had, and adding that on to the fact that they lost last week against the Rams, I mean, I think there is a lot of work for the Bucs to do at this point.
I think there's no question Bill Belichick's psychological covert operation was a success. You, during the week, gush about Tom Brady and you say things like, well, I always wanted Tom, but Tom wanted to go somewhere else. And, you know, really like plant those seeds of doubt in Tom, finally show that fatherly love that you never gave him over those 20 years of longing for Johnny Foxborough. And then all of a sudden, Tom rolls into the game a little bit soft, a little bit emotional, and bam, that's when you hit him. I think that was the plan all along. I think it was executed perfectly, but that's why you got to give Mac Jones the ball at the end so you could just drive the stake in. But, you know, it can't be perfect. Nothing can, you know, the NFL doesn't let me write the endings. So,
well, this is how the world ends, not with a bang, but with a doink. Scott Brody, our podcast boss, sent me that line. He didn't say I had to read it, but I read it, Scott.
Good stuff, Scott.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well. Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, so the Cardinals went into L.A. and basically pushed around everyone's favorite team. The Rams go down in this one, and it wasn't particularly close. It's a 37-20 victory for the Cardinals in this game. They led 37-13 until the final 2 minutes. So lopsided victory here, and we will take a step back, talk about the Cardinals in broader terms, but as far as this game goes, we just kind of have to, we are legally obligated to recognize the magnificence of Kyler Murray at this moment.
Yeah, he's really making the offense go. He is the person who's doing exceptional things to make plays work. And I think that plays into the question of how sustainable this is, because we saw last season that when he got a little bit dinged up and didn't have quite that same, you know, pull a rabbit out of a hat ability, then the Cardinals weren't quite as good. So it's almost a little similar to Russell Wilson in the early parts of the 2020 season, right? This, you know, incredibly hot start, and you wonder, is this sustainable? And it's really hard when so much of it is riding on one main person.
I wish that Jenny could have seen the thoughts in my head, because it was like she was just pulling him out. But that's what happens when you work with someone for the better part of 10 years. So that's a good thing. But I would say then to peel it back a little bit, you know, he is compensating for so much, and the Cardinals are playing well, right? You know, I think like three of their five offensive linemen are in the top 10 of ESPN's pass block or run block win rate, you know, and JJ Watt's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL right now. But you're still asking an awful lot out of like third contract, 30-year-old plus veterans. Like AJ Green, I think led the team in receiving today. And you know, that matchup was obviously favorable, which is why he got targeted a lot. But like they're asking a lot of people like JJ Watt, Chandler Jones, Rodney Hudson. And I don't know if 4-0 beyond this is sustainable, but it is fun to watch like this peak of Kyler at his highest powers right now.
Yeah, when they started to pull away in the first half, there were two plays where Kyler just, it's just plays he's making single-handedly. He converted 3rd-and-14 to keep a touchdown drive alive, and he converted a 3rd-and-16 to keep a touchdown drive alive. They would have settled for a field goal there, but I mean, that's basically 11 points there that you don't get if basically anyone but Kyler Murray is your quarterback, because we see guys who do amazing things out of structure in this league. I don't know if they quite do it the way that Kyler does in Arizona right now, with just what he's doing with his legs and the way he's creating when there just isn't anything there for him. I will say the one difference between the Cardinals this year and last year, defensively, they're more capable. And I thought Vance Joseph did just an exceptional job with what was a pretty undermanned unit in the second half of 2020. He's doing the same type of job this year, except now he also has J.J. Watt and Chandler Jones in the lineup to do their thing. And it's just it's a well-schemed defense. It's a well-prepared defense. You saw one of the interceptions of Matthew Stafford that Byron Murphy had, where, it's what the Rams do now. They sort of move one way at the beginning of the play, and then because it's Matthew Stafford, they attack deep on the other side of the field. And this time, Byron Murphy was waiting back there to intercept a pass. It was just a really good performance on both sides of the ball here. And that's not to say, again, that the Cardinals struggled defensively last year, but I think it gives them a little more margin for error should Kyler Murray sort of, only deliver two superhero plays per game instead of five superhero plays per game in the second half of the season.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Gary. And I think that is one of the flaws in the comparison I just made to the 2020 Seahawks, because this Cardinals defensive unit is really good and can support Murray in wins. It's just on the offensive side of the ball. And of course, there are other good players on offense. Clearly, DeAndre Hopkins, and he's surrounded by a lot of good players. It's not that he's not, but it's just he's taking on so much of the burden to make plays work. But you're right, sharing the burden of winning with the other side of the ball is important. And it's a balanced team, which is maybe why they will hang around longer than they did last season.
Here's what's wild to me about the Cardinals. I was looking up something when I was writing about them this afternoon after the 4 o'clock game. And I said, I wonder what happened to Andy Isabella, right? That second round pick. And Jen, I remember you and I talked about this on the Weak Side podcast. There was that video inside the Cardinals draft room, and it just seemed like they freaked out because the person they wanted got taken. And so they were like, Andy Isabella. And it was so, it seems so perfectly encompassing of this marriage of a GM on his last legs and a college coach who'd been fired by Texas Tech the year before running an NFL team. And you're like, oh yeah, that's what this looks like. And now, like, none of that matters. None of the learning curve mattered. None of the gigantic mistakes that they made seemed to matter. Andy Isabella, by the way, has not played a snap this year. He was a healthy scratch. They've signed like 8 other wide receivers to replace him. And like, but they've done this a lot and none of that seems to matter. And like, the Jaguars hired arguably the most famous college football coach in history, and he can't win a game. And Cliff Kingsbury, who's fired by the Texas Tech, is 4-0 with the Cardinals. Like, just nothing about this makes sense, and I love it. It's amazing.
There's just I think there's a little something to be said for, I mean, look, we love jumping on people's mistakes. I mean, I want to tear
love
down
it.
My social betters any chance I get.
Mm.
But the team that just won the Super Bowl has a GM who drafted a kicker in the second round, drafted Jameis Winston when everyone said, oh, Jameis Winston, this will be Jason Light's legacy. If Jameis Winston works out, he'll be a legend. And if he doesn't, like, he'll lose his job. And yeah, no, he didn't work out. And Jason Light won a Super Bowl. And I didn't even pronounce his name right like the first three times there. So that tells you how well this is going at this point. But I don't know. This was I think on basic cable channels, they will tell you this was a statement win for the Cardinals. We don't really have that in the NFL. They can't really write into the NFL if they go 9-8 and say, we made this statement in week 4. Please allow us to join the postseason. But this is a nice win. It gives them an upper hand in the NFC West going on the road and winning in Los Angeles. And I don't know. They have something going here.
I think so. I'm not ready to sign up for the Cardinals. Like, if there was like a – do you remember when you were Gary would definitely remember this because it happened a long time ago, but there used to be like the things that they would mail you where it was like you got 16 CDs for a dollar, and then you didn't realize you were signing up to buy 11 CDs a month at full price for the rest of your life. I'm not signing that deal with the Cardinals right now. I'm not ready for that. But I would like to take advantage of the introductory offer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that was the old thing where you sign up for it and you get your free CDs and then you write back and say, I'm not going to pay you. And they say you have to. And then you say, I'm 14 years old. And then it would just kind of go away. So that was life in the 90s for any of you who weren't there for it.
That is amazing. I never thought about that. Like, what recourse did what was it, like Columbia House or something like
yeah.
that?
Oh, yeah. That's what it was.
I did that. Someone told me to do it, and I did it. I shouldn't have done it. It's a terrible advice, but yeah, nothing happened. I didn't like apply for a mortgage one day and be like, oh yeah, hey, you got this Stone Temple Pilots CD in 1994. Seems you didn't pay for it full, so your APR is going to be 38%. But yeah.
That's what I was going to say. It didn't seem like a hypothetical there. It seemed a little bit too specific. So
no,
I'm glad to fess up.
It worked out. I beat the system the only time I ever have or probably ever will. All right, guys, let's talk Dallas Cowboys over the previously unbeaten Carolina Panthers. The score in this one was 36-28. Again, another one of these games. Not that close. This was a 36-14 game in the fourth quarter, and the Cowboys really, once the second half got underway, just sort of controlled it. And we will talk about the Panthers going forward. They will remain relevant, but I think we're going to be a little bit Dallas-centric right here, that undercovered team over in the NFC East. But I kind of am really interested in looking back at what was going on week 4 for this team a year ago when Dak Prescott, statistically, he was thrilling fantasy managers with these just obscene passing totals. I mean, he was on pace for like 6,000 yards or whatever it was, but they were turning the ball over a ton, especially early in games, and that was causing them to have to throw 60 times every week, and it was a formula just built to lose games. They weren't taking it away. They were struggling in Mike Nolan's defense. Right now, they're winning with run game and defense at this point, and Dak Prescott is playing really well, but they don't ask him to basically carry them in the way he had to a year ago, and this seems like a sustainable formula, certainly to win the NFC East, but really to maybe be a dark horse type of team come January, maybe?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think this was a Dallas team that, on paper last year going into it, when they drafted CeeDee Lamb, and, you know, they looked fairly complete on the offensive side of the ball. The defense was obviously in tatters a little bit, but I think now that they've rounded the team out as well as they have, I think you could totally consider them a dark horse. Dak Prescott is one of the 4 or 5 best quarterbacks in the NFL. He's one of those players that never disallows you from competing in a game, right? You're always in a game if you have Dak Prescott. He's like, you know, I look at it as like those quarterbacks who can engineer those crazy 2 or 3 touchdown swings in the second half. Like, he's one of those guys. And so I would say, why not? And now that the team that I picked to win the NFC East is completely out of the conversation at this point, I'm going to pretend that I believe this about the Cowboys all along.
Plus, we're seeing Trevon Diggs, second round pick in 2020. He's really coming to his own. 5 interceptions, I think, is the number, unless I missed another one in the waning minutes of the game. And also, I look back too at week 1, and I remember coming out of that game, it was one of those, well, there are no moral victories in football. How much does it really mean that they played the Super Bowl champion Bucks tight? But at this point, it looks like it did mean a lot, that they were a team that was ready to compete, and their performance in that game was possibly representative of how good they are as a team, that they could contend with the defending champions. And in the weeks since, you know, they've built upon that, I think. And we have seen this, as Gary said, a well-rounded team that can win games a lot of different ways. So I think it's encouraging. I didn't expect to say that.
I will say, and we all know that rushing attempts correlate to wins because you tend to run the ball more when you're playing with a lead. But you look back at the last 2 years, at this point last year, Dak was attempting 50.8 pass attempts per game. This year it is 33.25. If I could Peter King present the last three games for Dak Prescott, 27 pass attempts, 26 pass attempts, 22 pass attempts. All Cowboys wins, and we love Peter, but he loves listening stats in that way. Well, let's keep the NFC East fever going. The Giants go down to New Orleans, 27-21 overtime victory over the Saints. And this was, I don't know, it feels like it's moving in the right direction here. It's a little more of what we hoped for. It was a more aggressive offense. It was a slightly more forward-thinking offense. And that's better than what we saw from this team for the first couple of weeks. I mean, I think there's just... I thought this game today was really an example of what the Giants could and should be offensively.
Yeah, Jason Garrett finally got to watch enough Cowboys games this year to fax over the remainder of the playbook that he forgot to steal, and so good for him. But, I thought it was interesting. It's like it's a realization of what we had seen for most of the year. Daniel Jones is playing like one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL. He really is developing into a good player. Kenny Golladay, when we saw him screaming on the sidelines in Washington a few weeks ago, wasn't yelling at Daniel Jones. He was yelling at Jason Garrett. You know, and I think all the frustration was directed towards that offensive coordinator. But slowly and surely, he's starting to allow some of these, like, little moments to bleed into the game plan. The Saquon Barkley long reception was obviously one where, you know, he took some player input. That was a long gain that Saquon had told him, you know, they're covering me this way. You know, there's going to be a soft spot in the defense. You go back to that shot later in the game. I think he's moving him around a little bit more, and he's allowing Daniel Jones and Kenny Golladay to develop that trust and that bond, which is, this is why you paid for him in the first place. He's the best contested catch receiver in the NFL. You're just allowing the two of them to establish a rapport. Kadarius Toney finally got the ball in space, but in a sensible way, you know, not like a jet sweep that was, you know, just doomed from the beginning and was going to get blasted 8 yards behind the line. Like, you know, now you're starting to roll a little bit momentum wise. And as unhappy as people have been with Jason Garrett, this is probably the game that gets people off of his back a little bit.
Yeah. And I have to say, in the last segment, when Connor said the team he picked to win the NFC East is out of it, I mean, hey, maybe they're not. We just talked about how good the Cowboys are. And of course, they're taking the lead in that division. But I thought this was a really encouraging step for the Giants, because all of the good things that we'd seen in Daniel Jones the first 3 weeks of the season that weren't being fully utilized, and the team wasn't turning those into wins. And it just felt like the progress that Jones had made was being put to waste. Today was different, and it was a quality win against the Saints. So who knows? Maybe they just needed a couple weeks for things to come together. I think this could be an interesting division race.
If I can pull the curtain back in a way that nobody cares about for just a moment. Our other editor, Mitch Golich, is out this week. So I was sort of fielding Connor's pitches for sort of game day columns. And we were talking basically Giants funeral midway through the third quarter as they had the ball in their own territory, trailing by 11. And I think right after that exchange, we had the Saquon Barkley long touchdown pass, which again, it's like, it's a blown coverage. It's a blown zone coverage by the Saints. But if they know the Giants' tendencies, yeah, you're not expecting Saquon Barkley to actually run further than 5 yards past the line of scrimmage when he's lined up wide. I mean, that's not what they do. And, you know, that's what they did on this play. And it ends up in a 54-yard touchdown there. Yeah, Kadarius Toney was a big factor in this one. But I do want to bring up the one thing we kind of wondered coming into the season. Okay, can you get sort of the maximized Daniel Jones where he's giving you the big plays, but also he's not losing 4 fumbles per game? Since that week one lost fumble, he has had 1 turnover in 3 games. And that 1 turnover was the Hail Mary he threw at the end of the first half in this game. He has not turned the ball over. He has delivered big plays. When they have basically allowed him to. I mean, I think this is the start of Daniel Jones establishing himself as sort of an indisputable franchise quarterback, but they need to allow him to do the type of things that they did in this game, which, I don't know, I hope they will at this point.
I'm starting to believe that this is all part of Dave Gettleman's master plan, right? You you deck the cards as such that it takes Daniel Jones so long to materialize as a franchise quarterback that his second contract is much lower than that of his counterparts. He doesn't have to sign a top of the market extension. And Jason Garrett working along those same lines where you put so many bad tendencies on film over the course of 3 weeks that it lures teams into thinking you're going to make more bad decisions, but instead you start making good decisions. What a move by the Giants there. Forward thinking.
That's some 4D chess right there. Yeah, we'll see that. Look, you can see it. You can undoubtedly see it now that there is something there. And I don't know. I'll just wrap this up by saying, you know, Connor does his future head coaches list, and I think you can make addendums. I think you can add Jason Garrett to the end of that list. put it out tomorrow. Jason Garrett was a fine head coach who had plenty of success. I shouldn't pick on him. All right, let's go to Minnesota, where the Browns outlast the Vikings. And one, I thought this was a really interesting game because it's basically two teams that run the same offense playing against each other. So it's like, oh, okay, the defenses kind of see this in practice every day. And that's always kind of neat to see how that plays out. But we had two really good defensive performances. But I don't know, what stands out to me about this, it was a 14-7 Browns victory. What their defensive line is doing is basically it's taking over games. It's just overwhelming anything else that can possibly happen right now. And it just, to me, it has a very 2019 49ers kind of feel to it, what Cleveland is doing through 4 weeks.
Interesting. And the 2019 49ers were a team that made it to the Super Bowl. So according to one of Connor's predictions, that team could fit the criteria. So an apt comparison, Gary. I see that you're all on board with Connor's prediction.
It's such a I honestly feel for Connor because, like, this prediction is absolutely playing out for him. The Browns look absolutely tremendous. And it's like you're just going to be mocked for conflating make the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl at some point this summer. And it's like completely canceling out your otherwise excellent prediction.
I know. You know, this is the life of an oracle. You know, you live by it and you die by it, but that's okay.
But it's, you know, it's an important point about the front four, and we joke about it, but that is what a lot of successful teams have used to get to the championship game. And I think that's a reason why Connor picked them to go far this season, that maybe some of the pieces elsewhere on the defense might need some time to come together, you know, rookie linebacker, a free agent safety. But if you can get pressure up front, then it makes everything else a lot easier.
Yeah, the Jadeveon Clowney signing really sealed it for me. And just to watch the physicality, I mean, obviously the Vikings, you know, they got up early on that score, but to just watch some of the situational football when they got into that first red zone where, you know, they're only gaining like a yard or two at a time. And like, this is really arduous to try to run the football on this team. And it's funny how like this next gen club is built on basically the core principles of every old fashioned football coach, which is that you need to run the ball well and you need to stop the run. But that's exactly what the Browns are doing. And they're doing a really phenomenal job of it and just kind of slapping a different title on it. But at this point, outside of, you know, some drop passes, maybe you'd want a little bit more from Baker Mayfield, but I don't know what more you could ask of this team right now. I mean, yeah, sure, Baker Mayfield is not Josh Allen right now, right? But the system is not dictating that he be Josh Allen. They don't really want him to be Josh Allen. And so I think they're perfectly fine and capable of continuing to just sort of win these games the way that they've been winning them now.
Yeah, we saw their only loss this season has been to the Chiefs. Next up, they play the Chargers, which is another interesting measuring stick game because you're playing against a team where the quarterback is asked to, you know, put up a lot of points and can pass, you know, downfield on a whim. So I think that will be another interesting game to see. Does this style of football hold up against a team like the Chargers?
Yeah, and you had a couple of misconnections between Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. in this game. And it just, I hate to say this because it's just so, it's so trite. It's just oversimplifying to say like, yeah, it's just a chemistry issue. But it really does just look like two guys who are individually doing fine. They just, you know, they don't know exactly what the other one is going to do on some of these throws. So there was one that would have been absolutely game-clinching downfield where, you know, Odell was expecting it over one shoulder, came over the other shoulder, and, like, that's it. And that, you know, that turns into just a missed opportunity at that point. But they're still sitting there winning games, and, yeah, I don't know, just the formula they have right now, it is absolutely sustainable. So,
I mean, until they do the true analytical thing, which would be to trade Odell Beckham for Cordarrelle Patterson, everything else is sound. It's good. It's good football.
Yeah, it is interesting to see how that will continue to play out, because I think one challenging thing is when you have it in your head that, or people are asking questions, or there's a lot of speculation about, oh, you're never on the same page. Does it get into your head? Is it harder to overcome that? I think with a quarterback and receiver, that can be the case. So I'm interested to see, or even like forcing throws, right? Interested to see how this plays out in the coming weeks.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is.
In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
So let's go out to Santa Clara, where the Seahawks get a much-needed win here in San Francisco, although they catch a couple breaks in this one. We'll get into that. But Seattle wins 28-21 over the 49ers. And let's start with Trey Lance, actually. So Jimmy Garoppolo suffers a calf injury, does not come back out after the second half. He was deemed questionable but did not Did not take another snap in this game. So Trey Lance basically got a full half of football here. It was. I had expectations that he might be a little more polished and more ready than people expect, but he did look incredibly raw. He looked not terribly comfortable on the stuff that wasn't really highly schemed to basically allow him to make easier throws. And yeah, I don't know. It just looked like a guy who probably hasn't taken a lot of practice reps and wasn't quite prepared for the speed of an NFL regular season game.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that they want to sit Trey Lance. They want to take the time to develop him because he's raw. But they also drafted him in large part because Jimmy Garoppolo has missed a lot of games with injury. And so here an injury comes up in the first month of the season and Lance is put into the game earlier than they wanted to. Even your best plans to develop a rookie quarterback can easily go awry. And I thought the same as you, Gary. There were some throws that were a little bit high, some throws that were off target. Obviously, he has tremendous ability to run and, you know, extend plays. And we'd seen that in the Trey Lance package. But clearly, the offense stalled a little bit, and it was a big swing in the Seahawks' favor when Trey Lance came in at halftime. I mean, not to say that Garoppolo was perfect in the first half, but you have a rookie quarterback pushed into action a little bit earlier than the team wants. That's obviously going to be in favor of the opponent.
I was disappointed. This coming from a guy who admittedly wrote that even if Trey Lance only played a few series every week, he was going to help change the NFL. So guilty as charged there. Bad job by Connor during the preseason column writing. Someone should take the keyboard away from me when the games don't count. But it was, you know, you feel a little bit lied to, right? Because what were you hearing about Trey Lance and Kyle Shanahan's offense when he was coming out? This is not going to be Robert Griffin. It's going to look completely different than Robert Griffin. And then what was the first couple series? It was bunch pistol, you know, kind of a zone ready thing. It looked a lot like when Kyle Shanahan was calling plays for Robert Griffin. And you know, I granted that this is sort of something you have to sort of slap and dash together. So I understand you weren't planning on playing him or utilizing him like that. The throwback play to Debo is nice. You know, and something that they had obviously had success with in the preseason, but I was just personally surprised at how raw Lance was because like we've mentioned on the show before, I mean, he is in the ear of the quarterback's coach during games. He was hand selected because Trey Lance spent the draft season with Kyle Shanahan's preferred tutor. And he was getting all this information on this guy and the footwork. And like, I guess I just thought that even as raw as Lance was, there was going to be a more seamless transition to the field. I wasn't expecting to go like 20 for 22, but, and maybe it's just the by virtue of he's not the starter, he's not getting starter snaps. It's not the game plan, but still, I mean, it is, you know, I don't know. I guess I expected a little bit more.
Long touchdown pass to Debo Samuel, it wasn't even particularly well on target. Samuel was so wide open that it didn't matter, but right. Samuel basically had to hesitate and the ball fluttered a little bit in the air. And again, because there wasn't a defender within like 20 yards of Debo Samuel, it didn't matter. But that play stood out to me because it was like, okay, there's definitely some mechanical stuff that timing or, you know, tying your footwork to the timing, whatever work needs to be done that to be a little bit more on target, there still it seems a ways to go in that department.
Yeah, no, I think it's fair to give something of a break to Kyle Shanahan and that 49ers staff, and that, you know, like Connor said, they weren't preparing for this. This wasn't a deal where you're rolling out an offense for Trey Lance and here it is. I mean, they had to change mid-game, but yeah, I mean, the other thing is, look, at North Dakota State, he ran an offense that had a lot of principles that are similar to what they do in Kyle Shanahan's offense. You know, it was a lot of under center stuff, a lot of play action stuff. I didn't think the transition would be as steep as a lot of people thought, and it looked like he just wasn't ready when he went in there today. And we'll see how it goes. You know, that Seahawks defense is also a little bit of a it's a little bit of a nice starter defense to face if you're forced into action. And they moved the ball a little bit, but, you know, like you guys said, that Debo Samuel's touchdown was as blown a coverage as you can get. And that's just kind of how it went. And unfortunately, they spoiled a really good performance defensively here. Seattle had 4.3 yards per play, 234 on the game. The Seahawks are lucky to be getting out of there with a 500 record in what's going to be a really good division. And I'm not sure what else to say about this Seattle team right now. They don't look terribly sharp. They look like a 500 football team at the moment.
Yeah, and while it was a little bit of a over-exaggeration to say that nobody was within 20 yards of Deebo Samuel, wasn't that much of an exaggeration. It was clear miscommunication. And I mean, you know, there's busted coverages, but it looked like Jamal Adams expected that they were passing off assignments, and the corner on that side had a different interpretation. Hard to know exactly what went on in the play, but I agree with you, Gary. The Seahawks are maybe the most frustrating iteration that we've seen. You have a quarterback like Russell Wilson, and you have the ability to score on these moon balls in a second, right? But yet they're not a dominant team. Like, there's just like a dissonance there that is frustrating.
There is. And we should note, for special teams enthusiasts, Robbie Gould suffered a groin injury pregame, and Mitch Wishnowsky doing the place kicking was a fun little storyline until he missed a PAT and missed a 41-yarder, and things went a little bit sideways there. So, look, Seattle needed a few breaks. They need to find some solutions on both sides of the ball, especially on defense. But they get out of here with a road win in a tough division, and that's good news for them. Let's go out to Lambeau for a classic matchup, the Steelers and the Packers, in what was a pretty ugly, nasty game, 27-17 Packers victory here. I don't have a whole lot to say about the Packers' performance here, other than they kind of didn't quite get to play this one on their terms, but they still, they still won it with relative comfort.
Matt LaFleur can't get a break with the refs. That was clearly tripping by TJ Watt. Like, there was no interpretation that was not tripping. And I just was thinking back to last week. It's just been a bad run for LaFleur and the refs.
We were talking last week about coaches who have the best angry faces with officials, and whether or not that can scare officials into doing things that they want. Which, by the way, we didn't mention that Sean Hockley went to the Cardinals sideline and was like talking to Isaiah Simmons, right? After that.
Yeah,
like, I've never seen an official break the plane of the so the fourth wall is breaking. Everything is crazy in the NFL right now. We don't know what's going to happen. But meanwhile, Matt LaFleur is just, he's great. 26 wins in his first two seasons as a head coach, but he's got to get a better angry face. And what he did was, I noticed, like, he just sort of swatted his small little play card in the air. Like,
I saw that.
It's just kind of like what my dad does if there's like a ladybug in the house, it needs to be better. You need to be angrier. You need to be scarier. I think after 26 wins, I would be scared of you as a head coach. And so I think you need to allow that confidence to pour itself out when you're yelling at the refs.
But it's also coupled with the death stare from Aaron Rodgers. So
yes. True.
I think there's a little bit juice coming from the Packers than just LaFleur's face.
I would, if I were Matt LaFleur — I'm a very unintimidating person, just based on the visuals — I would have like a pre-broken tablet brought to me anytime someone wrong, and pretend I was flagging something that I saw during the play, and then just snap it right in front of the official. I think that'd be a good use of resources.
That's really just good. Like, snap it over your knee. That would be cool, right?
Or, I mean, if you really want to have it, just do it on your head. Do it breaking the bat on your head, sort of. Yeah.
Paging Danny Campbell.
Yeah. While we're talking about quirky things from this game, also the play when Rodgers was clearly going to Davante Adams on third down, but Randall Cobb, the receiver that he wanted to sort of make nice with the Packers, reached up and tried to grab the pass. And Rodgers' face afterward was like, of course I would be going to Davante Adams on third down. Like, of course that was where I was going, right? Like, Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I thought that was an amusing moment.
Randall Cobb is rightfully feeling himself here.
I did enjoy the very forced second touchdown to Randall Cobb, by the way, which, like, Rodgers could have run in with such ease and instead, like, decides to thread the ball into Randall Cobb, like, just as, like, a sort of nose thumbing. Maybe there's a performance incentive, like he's trying to get Brian Gutekunst to pay out all these obnoxious performance incentives. But thing of note here, I do think that the Packers defense is playing slightly better, and rookie cornerback Eric Stokes with an interception there at the end of the game of Ben Roethlisberger, I think has had a couple big defensive plays here in the last few weeks. So it's been it's good to see this team sort of rounding into form after the Saints caught them off guard schematically there. And I think that while it's not the most beautiful brand of football at the moment, it's effective. And I don't know who's catching them, right? I think this is like one of the most open and shut cases in the NFL where this team is just going to walk away with the division.
No, I agree with that. And I like that Eric Stokes is getting something of a sink or swim type of period here. And look, yeah, he's made some mistakes, but it's better he make them now than he make them in January. I mean, we saw what happened when Kevin King struggled so badly in their playoff run last year. So, you know, whatever, get him out there, get him ready. This will be good for him. Yeah, the Steelers offense, I don't know, man. I thought there would be some more answers to it, and I think one of the answers is maybe some of their receivers just need to make more plays here. No Chase Claypool in this one, and that's kind of the way it goes. But, boy, if I see them throw 3 yards short of the sticks on a 4th-and-4 again, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to have my pre-broken tablet and just, like, smash it to just 1,000 pieces.
It also seemed to be a tense moment between Ben Roethlisberger and Juju Smith-Schuster at the end of the game, and they clearly had a couple misconnections that could have been big plays and just didn't seem like they were on the same page either on the field or talking about things afterward on the bench.
How does that feel to turn down more money to play for the Ravens than to come back and play for the half-armed Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers? Juju needs to stop listening to Gary's preseason predictions and flowery prose on the Matt Canada offense, which we have yet to see come to fruition.
It's the long game here. Juju knows that. They have it. Look, you go into Lambeau and lose. That's the way it goes sometimes. But yeah, it's just, you know, between the 4th-and-medium meekness with some of these plays, and then on top of that, just that cover-2 hole shot at the end of the game. They're down 10, and there's less than 2 minutes left. They're not going to win the game, but we talked about this last week, and you might be right, Connor. It just feels like such a give-up throw. It feels like a let's get out of here type of throw that he makes, where it's not going to happen. There's no throw available there. You can't make that throw at this point in your life, and it's just like, I'm going to toss it over there. It's a turnover, and let's all go home.
Well, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. I stand by my defense of the 4th-and-10 swing pass from last week. I know that's controversial. I'm not backing away from that, but Ben Roethlisberger made that point, I think, for us at the end of the game, where he's like, okay, that's the look we want against picket fence zone, but the alternative is for me to hang back there and try to thread the needle against, you know, really good defense. And, you know, he's like, maybe I should have done that, but I think the inference there is like, do you really want me doing that then? Or do you want me to follow the scheme? And so I think he doesn't know. And I think it's hard to read a player's facial expressions. I mean, I'm not I'm not an FBI criminal profiler by any stretch of the imagination, but there seem to be these long stretches of the game where he just looks bewildered and dejected. Like, and it really is like, there's just like a sadness to this. Like there is like a sad sort of like, bummer element to watching him just sort of slump around the field for 60 minutes.
Yeah, the end is never, well, I take that back. sometimes the end can be beautiful, but in many cases.
Peyton Manning had a good end.
Yeah. As soon as I started that sentence, but what? It's often this. Or like, you know, the end of Eli's career, right? I mean, more often than not, it goes this way and you want to come back for one more shot, but it's just more of the same. And I think you could be right, Connor, that some of those thoughts are crossing his mind.
Well, let's go to the beginning for Zach Wilson and his first win for Robert Saleh as an NFL head coach as well. 27-24, the Jets defeat the Titans. I think we're going to spend about 45 minutes talking about the Titans' kicking game, but before we get to that, we'll talk Zach Wilson. And look, this was Zach Wilson, as we've seen through 3 weeks, he is a raw quarterback. He is a mistake-prone quarterback. He is also still a spectacularly talented quarterback, and I do dislike when people, it's the old, you watch Sunday Night Football and they're trying to pump up the Bears offense, like, well, if you take Mitchell Trubisky's 20 best throws over his career, you'd think he's Patrick Mahomes. It's like, well, yeah, the problem is the other, 1,000 throws he's made during his career. Like, you can't just bank on that, but Zach Wilson turned in just a number of eye-popping, little flares to it. One started with a fumbled snap. Another one, he's, rolling out and escaping pressure and waving for Corey Davis to go downfield for a long touchdown. There was just an element of like just entertainment, fun to the way he won this game and the way he performed in this one that, I don't know, even if they had not come away with it, it was kind of like, okay, yeah, I can get into this.
I loved watching him, and I think what's interesting is he's still doing some of the things that, like the concerning things, right? Like the 1-2-3 and out stuff, he's still missing.
Yep.
And that's some of the stuff that you saw in training camp where it's like, everybody's raving about, him going deep to Elijah Moore and torching the defense. And you're like, okay, but in like the one-on-one thing where there's no cornerbacks, these balls are still behind guys. Like even the touchdown to Jamison Crowder, it was behind him and he threw it late. But he's so talented from an arm perspective that he can still make it work. And so I think it's interesting. I think it's a kudos to the Jets offense that they were finally able to kind of get that boot action stuff going. So we had all that time, like mm-hmm. he did at BYU, where he can examine the field a little bit and then make that sort of, and the Rodgers comparison was certainly a stretch out of college, but that sort of throw and that's what he can do. And he had the one veteran moment where I think in overtime, he recognized that the Titans were in the wrong defense and they weren't lined up, and he hurried up a play call and he got a big completion that set up a field goal. And so I there's the bad and there's the good. And I think, I wrote that he was just okay today, but that's good. I think so often we've had these debuts from Jets quarterbacks who have been good or great to begin with. I mean, Darnold had that 48-point Monday Night Football win over the Lions and then completely caved. And Jenny and I have been through a lot of A Star Is Born moments with Mark Sanchez over the years, or Geno Smith, or Greg McElroy. And so I think this is just, this is a slow, steady, progressional build, and this is good. I mean, this is what you're supposed to do. If a guy throws four picks, he comes back and plays a little bit better the next week. And that's what happened.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I think it was encouraging that he wasn't wrecked by the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I think the concern sometimes when you play a quarterback and there's no veteran backup plan is that you ruin him. And, you see what happens to quarterbacks that get hit a lot or that make a lot of mistakes early and they lose confidence. We didn't see that with Wilson. And this performance, in a way, not to compare the 1-2 picks to each other, but, we saw Trevor Lawrence on Thursday night make some of those wow plays that were like, hey, remember me? Like, this is why I was drafted number one. And I think we saw the same thing from Wilson on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was a good week for rookie quarterbacks here. The Titans went into this one, no A.J. Brown, no Julio Jones. So they were limited with what they were doing offensively. They still, Derrick Henry had a very Derrick Henry type of performance on the ground. They still kind of, controlled the clock and all that. But I don't know. They got to the end of overtime. They were set up for a game tying kick at the end of overtime. Probably would have resulted in a tie game result. But Randy Bullock misses from 49, way wide to the left. And that was the moment Randy Bullock became a Titans kicker.
Michael Badgley, get on the horn.
I'm just saying, you got to be patient with your kickers. You gotta give them a chance. but not Randy Bullock, only Michael Badgley.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in the bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is. With just a few taps on the app, you can have Angie tackle your home service project start to finish.
With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. It's your one-stop shop. Angie can help you find the best price for your project by comparing quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. They get the difficulties that can come with home projects. They get it. Why not make it as simple as possible? Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com or download the app today.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, it is time for the lightning-ish round. We are going to start this one with the Chiefs traveling to Philadelphia, where they still have some issues defensively, I think. But I don't know. I really don't think this team's outlook has changed significantly from what we thought they were preseason. This is a 42-30 victory on the road in Philadelphia, and that's that.
Yeah, I think that's right, Gary. But definitely still some stuff to sort out on defense. This was a good game for them to sort of get back on track a little bit after some surprising losses in the first 3 weeks of the season. And it was a nice homecoming for Andy Reid to win at the team that once fired him. So All of those things to get a little bit more good vibes after a bumpy start to the year.
Yeah. And two, with Philadelphia, I do think that Jalen Hurts is not playing horribly. I think this was a bad team and we thought they were bad going in, but in a promising sense, you know, outside of the Atlanta win that gave us a little bit of false hope, Jalen Hurts and Devonta Smith are playing pretty well. And so what else do you want? I mean, they're putting up some points and they're hanging in these games. Certainly. I mean, it was within striking distance for much of the game. I think if you're Jeffrey Lurie and you don't have delusions of grandeur at this point, I think this was a nice outing just to see the team somewhat competitive. And it probably leads you to believe that you probably do come out of the season thinking that Jalen Hurts might be your guy moving forward.
The Ravens go out to Denver, 23-7 victory. This was, look, for all the injury issues the Ravens have had and the fact that they have really squeaked out their last two wins, maybe they stole one from the Chiefs on a Sunday night. They certainly probably stole one in Detroit, a Lions team that isn't very good last week with the Justin Tucker field goal. But this was a fairly dominant victory out in Denver. And again, maybe the Broncos were not world beaters despite the 3-0 record. And they did lose Teddy Bridgewater to a concussion in the first half of this one. But this Ravens defense kind of just controlled this game throughout. And I don't know, this Ravens team, I guess there's just something to be said for... I don't know. Do you chalk it up to just, you know, a coaching staff that basically knows how to solve problems? Is it a culture thing where you just win 10 games every year, so it doesn't matter who you're running out there? Or, you know, they were incredibly impressive in this one.
Yeah, and I really loved that John Harbaugh had them run that final play to keep their streak of 100-yard rushing games alive. Yeah. Because I think that just shows that that is important to this team. It's part of their identity. It's part of the way they win games. And that's why they've been successful with Lamar Jackson, because they were willing to go all in on this different kind of offense, this different kind of way of playing football. And so his decision to do that, I think, was a reflection of that, that they know that that is important. Like, that's a badge of honor. And thus the streak did have meaning for the team.
Yeah. Bummer on the Broncos, on the Broncos side to see Teddy Bridgewater go down there, and just evident kind of how clear of a favorite he was over Drew Lock in the summer, and just their inability to get an offense going there. And you know, Bridgewater going into this game, if you look at expected points added, was playing arguably the best football in the NFL. And so a little bit of a bummer to see the Broncos derailed in that way. But to your point, guys, Lamar Jackson looks as good as we've seen him all year, and the streak is intact. I'm not going to lie, Jenny, you instantly changed my take on it, as you have the ability to do from time to time, because I was sitting there on the TV and I was like, what a jerk thing to do. But now I'm like, it doesn't really, well, it doesn't really matter. It's what you think about yourself. It's not what anybody else thinks. So.
Good life lesson, I suppose.
No doubt.
I was going to say, we learn valuable lessons on this podcast every week. The Bears bounce back nicely after last week's disaster. Justin Fields gets his first win as a starter, 24 to 14 over the Lions at home. I mean, it's a game they should win. It's a game where they got a lead. The Lions brought it inside the Bears 10-yard line three times and ended up going fumble. Turnover on downs, fumble. So that was the kind of day it was. So the Bears got to play with a lead, and they ran the ball a lot. I don't know if there was necessarily anything you'd see in this one where you'd say, boy, yes, they figured out with Justin Fields, this is what it's going to be. We know the Lions don't have a pass rush, nothing like the Browns have. But I don't know. I guess that's my long way of saying we probably didn't learn a lot, but it was good news for them.
Yeah, it was nice for Matt Nagy to get that one off his back, even though he still won't admit who's calling the plays, which is an amazing development in Chicago. And I love every minute of this clear discomfort, because clearly if you were calling the plays, you would just say, yeah, I'm calling the plays. But now you kind of go through this extra circuitous move of saying that I approve the plays, which is like a very fascinating development and doesn't seem to be something that you would want to do to expedite a play calling process in the NFL. Like you get the play call on the headset and then you have to go approve, you know, before it goes into fruition. But the Bears are going to Bears, and Justin Fields gets to shake it off. And I think that's what's the most important thing as a football lover of the game, is like, let's not have these kids kind of have their careers ruined by one atrociously game plan start. And, you know, let's let them become the future of the NFL.
And as for the Lions, they were pretty feisty the first 3 weeks of the season. I think this game, that steam kind of ran off. It's a roster that doesn't have a lot of talent. They have a lot of rebuilding to do. And I think this kind of performance was a little bit more what we expected, but kudos to Dan Campbell for the first 3 weeks of the season, you know, getting the team up to play and making some of those games pretty interesting.
A distinct lack of feist today.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was tough. I mean, their first...
It was tough.
You know, they give him a touchdown. They go down. They got, like, a goal-to-go situation. And they end up losing a fumble on a play where it just looks so stupid because it's one of those fumbles where Goff is in shotgun and he's coming up to the line to communicate something to his offensive line. And as he's leaning in to say something, the ball gets snapped into his face and bounces into a Bears player's arms. And, like, that's how your drive ends. And it just... People will laugh at you and make fun of you, and you'll never live it down. And that's the way it went. Let's go down to Miami, where the Colts get on the board with a victory this year. They will be AFC South champions when this is all said and done. I think we all knew that. We just thought there would be more beef involved and a few more losses involved before it went down that way. But they go down and get a victory. I think stylistically, this is kind of how they want to do it. Even without Quentin Nelson here, it was pretty balanced attack. Carson Wentz was fine. He was efficient. They moved the ball. They stayed on the field, and that's kind of how it goes here. So, you know, nice win for Indianapolis.
Yeah, it didn't take a massive instance of food poisoning to turn this team around, as I had projected during our preseason predictions. I thought this team would go 0-5 and then go on their winning streak, but 0-3 and then going in the winning streak is okay. So, you know, good for them. Also,
yeah, oracles aren't perfect.
Oracles aren't perfect. Also, Darius Leonard's still amazing. So,
and as for the Dolphins, really what's going on offense is frustrating, tough to figure out. Didn't seem to have a great game plan this week. I don't know how the offensive coordinator system is working, but it was just a really tough watch whenever the Dolphins were on offense.
Coaches are typically so rarely ego-driven. They're very cooperative and guys who love to share ideas and compliment other people's ideas. And so I'm sure a co-offensive coordinator thing, you know, there's no way that's doomed from the beginning. You know, there's a lot of growth opportunity there.
What they need is a 7-man play calling committee there. And then we can really get something done. No, I will say just watching what they're doing offensively, it just, and again, I realize I'm the world's biggest Jacoby Brissett fan. So I wear that badge and I have that tattoo, and that's just the way it's going to go for a long time. But, it looked like they were just basically asking him to operate the Tua playbook. And again, whatever you think of Tua, he has strengths, he has weaknesses. You would design a different offense for Tua than you would for Jacoby Brissett. It just seems like they're not taking advantage of the fact that they have a guy who can probably push the ball downfield more consistently, who's a little more of a power thrower, of a guy who's a guy you might be able to do more design run stuff around. They don't do it. They started attacking downfield, you know, late in this game, but it's already, you know, they were down 3 possessions at that point. It was too late. So, I mean, whatever. Now that they're sitting here at 1-3, maybe you'll see them get a little more aggressive and I don't know, just proactively try to win football games. I guess is what I'm hoping they start doing. I don't know. I'm exasperated right now. I got to draw up my own offense and start my own franchise for Jacoby Brissett to play in.
Trying to think of what the equivalent would be of your Jacoby Brissett tattoo in terms of real world relatability. Like, you know, maybe like a band that was famous for like a very hot second and you got the tattoo and then they fizzled out, like The Offspring or Smash Mouth or, well, Smash Mouth is still pretty big. But, you know,
yeah, I would
know.
Say those bands had sustained runs based on their limited pop culture knowledge.
Fountains of Wayne.
I would say it'd have to be someone a little more. I'll put some thought into it and come back with when the answer. Yeah, Offspring also has like a very devoted fan base. Like I feel like it's too big a fan base to be Jacoby Brissett at this point. But yeah, I don't know. I'll come up with something maybe by the end of the show here. Let's see. Washington goes to Atlanta and you know, quite possibly steals one. This is... We talked about how disappointing the Giants have been this year, sitting at 1-3 at this point, even with a nice win today. I think Washington's been immensely disappointing. Yet they are sitting here at 2-2. this is supposed to be a dominant defensive team. It is not. I don't even know if you could say it's a good defense at this point. The front four isn't taking over games the way they did a year ago. There are just a lot of coverage issues on the back end. And I don't know. I guess I should mention, yes, they won the game, so that's good. I'm shrugging my shoulders now if you're not watching on video.
It required some late-game heroics from cult hero Taylor Heinicke, though. So I think that's a good point, Gary, that was the big thing. The defensive front was the main thing that got them a division title last season. And the version that we're seeing this year is just not the same.
Jack Del Rio is the Jason Garrett of Washington, and there needs to be some repairs made. Another Gary column idea that we were tossing around, right? You said, well, you could either do Jason Garrett or Jack Del Rio, and then both teams ended up flipping the table, winning the games, and we had to really scrape the bottom of the barrel there. So
yeah, it was look, Jason Garrett's offense at least won the game. I mean, Jack Del Rio's defense kind of, I guess they stopped Matt Ryan in the final 34 seconds of this one to hold on. That's what you chalk it up to. But yeah, it's just, it's problematic. And look, maybe they figure it out, but I don't know. It's just, they have two wins. They have a lot of room for improvement. Maybe that's not the worst place in the world to be right now. All right, last one here. The Texans went up to Buffalo, and I think this was worse, even though statistically it's not as bad. I think this game was worse than the Browns win over the Bears last week. This just had the vibe of a fairly disinterested, like, SEC power the week that they host, like, one of the FCS teams. Like, they, for some reason, the SEC always seems, someone who knows college football better knows it. The SEC always seems to have that week in November where all of them host, like, some FCS school, and they all win, like, 70-7. Like, this felt like this, except the Bills were, like, fairly disinterested for, like, the first quarter, and still, like, it just went up 30-0 and ended up winning 40-0.
Right, like it was like North Carolina A&T was only down by like 6 at the end of the first quarter, and everybody got super feisty on the sidelines for a minute, and then Alabama just started running at full speed, and then they ended up, you know, destroying them. But my interesting takeaway from there was like the Texans beat somebody this year. Like, it's a fairly amazing thing to think that like this team beat another NFL team this year. And,
handily. They beat them handily. It was not a case of like, oh, they played in a tsunami and like scooped up like three, special teams fumbles and returned them for touch. They just destroyed another NFL team. Yeah, I don't know.
I maintain that in that week one, it's easy to rally around Tyrod Taylor, right?
Yes. True.
He's a guy who's had a lot of chances get ruined by factors out of his control, is well-liked by teammates, and so I could see a team really buying into that and summoning that energy week one, right? Like, Tyrod Taylor, like, we can get around this guy, and obviously, you know, he's injured and he's out for a not short period of time, a few weeks at least, and so we're seeing a rookie that isn't exactly prepared to play. I mean, I saw a tweet at one point that Brandon Cooks had both of the Texans' completions. And this was a point in the game that was, I believe it was in the second half when he had both of the completions.
It was like 3:48 Eastern time. It was time of day when, someone had two
completions. I mean, I made the outline this weekend. I put this game last in the lightning round because I don't know how much there is to really be gleaned from it.
I think my favorite part of Texans games is listening to the broadcast chatter. And like, you know, when the game is within 10, you know, they're just like, well, you know, David Culley, you know, he's got these guys playing hard. And then, you know, say what you will about everything, but they're working on this thing. And then it's like 40-0. And they're just like, Houston is a town in Texas, and that's about that, you know. And there's nothing else to say. This is a organization that is, you know, going through it, and it's a roster that's built to sell away for parts, and they're playing like it right now.
All right, guys, that's a wrap for our Week 4 show. I'm going to put this out for my Jacoby Brissett tattoo comp, and it is way too complimentary. I'm going to say Dinosaur Jr., though.
Oh, wow.
Indie, a really good band.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
I will forever claim that Jacoby Brissett is an excellent quarterback, no matter how this plays out.
Wow. Well, at some point, you know, maybe we could get the show's army of fans to just link Jacoby and Gary up. I think it would mean a lot to him, and just to be able to connect with Jacoby on social media and maybe talk a little bit about how much he appreciates him, and maybe talk a little bit about Dinosaur Jr., because that is that's overwhelmingly complimentary.
Yeah,
well,
it
before
is.
Before the show ends, I think I need to confess that I have never heard of Dinosaur Jr.
See, like, I think it's that. This is just in my mind, though. I think it's that mix of, like, it's an obscure enough band that I can basically argue, well, you know, just like people don't think Jacoby Brissett isn't good, but they just don't realize it. They never heard him the way that I did.
Mm.
I hope he likes Dinosaur Jr. it's the only thing I have to talk to him about. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Prentice, Connor Orr, and me, Gary Gramling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Thanks, as always, to senior podcast producer Dan Bloom, the one person who we know listens to every word of this show every week. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts, and once you do, please leave a rating and review, because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen.
It's up, it's up.
And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.